Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone. And after a little bit of an absence, I'm joined once again by my good friend JJ Duke. JJ, missed you, pal. How you been?
Yeah, I missed you too. It seemed like almost a part of me was gone, but that part is now back. So we're good.
The bromance is reunited, my friend. The bromance is reunited. Well, look, there's plenty. Bearing in mind, we haven't done a show for a little while. Obviously, we've had our NWSL season previews since our last show, so plenty to get through. We're going to kick off. I'm not going to do the whole, we're going to talk about, have a break, and then we go into the first subject. We're just going to jump straight in. And the first thing that I wanted to talk to you about, for the listeners' sake, is the Olympic group draw that took place in the last couple of weeks. We've not had a chance to discuss that. Obviously, there are 12 teams that will be competing in Rio this summer. Three groups of four teams. The top two sides will progress with the two best third place sides. So essentially, if you're a half decent team, you're pretty much guaranteed to go through to the quarterfinals. But when you saw the groups come out, what was your initial reaction? Obviously, we saw Brazil, China, South Africa, Sweden drawn in Group A. Group B is Australia, Canada, Germany, and Zimbabwe. And then Group C is Colombia, France, New Zealand, and USA. I say ABC, they've actually been redrawn as E, F, and G because obviously they're latching on to the men's tournament. I don't know why that is. But when you saw those groups come out, what was your initial reaction?
Honestly, it's almost kind of standard. It's almost gotten to the point now, Kieran, where you almost know who you're going to play in the Olympics, or at least you have a pretty good idea. Because you only have, you know, similar to the World Cup, obviously, you have the different amount of allocations per continental federations. You know that CONCACAF's having two teams. You know that UEFA's got four. Africa's got two. Asia, two. And Oceania, which by real translation, New Zealand, gets in there as well. U.S. group, almost similar to where it was in 2012, minus one team, you have France and Colombia that are in. Out is North Korea, who did not qualify. For the U.S., I think that's about as good of a group as you're going to get. You get it right off going. You know, France early, Colombia, New Zealand. On the other side, I thought really the toughest group for me, at least of the, you know, the teams that are going to be going at it, is Brazil's group. That's tough. That's China, Sweden and South Africa. We know we're, you know, South Africa, they're figuring it out, but they've got something going for them in past Olympic Games. Sweden, they're looking for some sort of renaissance. And then China with Bruno Bini, who is this close to getting a medal in London, will want that again. But it's six matches in a very short period of time. It's really going to be the survival of the fittest.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I think people's perceptions of what the most difficult group are very different, aren't they? I think people acknowledge that, with the exception of France, USA shouldn't really have too many problems. I look at Group F, though, with Australia, Canada and Germany. We've seen Australia progress so far over the last couple of years, the way they impacted the World Cup last year, but more so how they came through that really difficult Asian qualifying for the Olympics that we discussed a little while ago. Not only coming through it, but to finish top and beat off the likes of Japan and South Korea, who we know won't be at the tournament this year. And you look at them alongside last year's hosts of the World Cup, Canada. We've seen John Herdman make a lot of changes in that squad over the last few months, especially since the World Cup. Gone are the likes of Kaylin Kyle and Khan Moscato and Lauren Sesselman, and in are the likes of Janine Becky and Ashley, is it Ashley Lawrence?
Ashley Lawrence.
So young players coming through, they look a rejuvenated side, and you know what you're going to get with Germany as well. Yes, Zimbabwe are the weak link in that team, but or a weak link in that group, but that's the group that really stood out for me.
No, it is, and you know, I think the one thing that Canada will have to obviously be concerned with is now they're going to be without Aaron McLeod, who picked up an injury tragically very early on in her Champions League debut, I believe it was, or if it wasn't the first leg, it was the second leg. So it's going to be Steph LeBay or Sabrina D'Angelo that's going to be in between the post. And as you said, Germany, you know what you're going to expect. We got a little small sample at the March tournament here in the United States. They're a rebuilding team as well, but they still have firepower in a lot of different examples. But again, you know, for those three teams, it's mathematical. You have to figure out a way to get a point from either, you know, if you're talking Canada, Australia, and Germany, from those two games and try and run it up against Zimbabwe, because top three or top two third place teams go. You figure that one of those teams is going to come from that group. Not sure where the other one is going to be. But yeah, it's curious. But really, I think the true story of where this is going to be, you hate to always look ahead, but you have to look ahead. Because if you slip, your road to get a medal becomes so much harder.
Yeah, completely agree. And I think we're, as you say, the early stages are pretty predictable. Like you say, you know, the bigger teams will be expecting to go through. There's no doubt about that. The obvious, there will be one, if we're looking at potentially, it could well be a New Zealand or a Colombia that miss out. If we're looking at potentially Australia, Canada, Germany going through from F, Brazil, China, Sweden going through from E. These are my opinions, of course. I'm not necessarily saying that is going to be the case. But I guess one thing we probably should talk about and maybe finish off on is the hosts, Brazil, looking for their first major tournament victory. Could potentially be Marta's last major tournament. Certainly is likely to be her last Olympics. Pressure's on them, but on home soil, they've got to be considered one of the favourites as well, haven't they?
Yeah, you do think that way. And I've had conversations with many journalists that cover women's soccer. And it's almost a Jekyll and Hyde of a Brazil team. You don't know what's going to show up. You're going to get the 2007 Women's World Cup version where they run past everyone, play some beautiful soccer. Or they're a team that shows up in the last World Cup. And basically they flame out in the first knockout round. Home soil, that can be an advantage, but it also can be another pressure where, you know, you're almost in that mindset of you have to succeed. You have to get some attention to that federation for the women's program. But at the same time, you could feed off of that home crowd if you're down a goal in the final 10 minutes. So, yeah, it's interesting. If they win their group, they'll play in Belo Horizonte in the quarterfinals and then in Rio the rest of the way. But on the other side of things, if the United States wins that group, their group, that those two teams could clash in the semifinals, which could be all the makings of a game that everyone would want to see, except the players probably themselves knowing that it's going to be a tough match if they want to make any sort of run toward a gold medal.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the key things for Brazil also is that they avoid Manaus, obviously the city that is in the middle of the Amazon rainforest. And I know that the teams that competed in the World Cup in 2014, the men's tournament, Manaus was not the popular choice for them to be participating in. So,
guess who got drawn into that location?
The United States will be playing in Manaus. Yes, they will be. So it's going to be a test for them, no doubt about that. But look, the Olympics is a few months away, certainly a tournament that we are all looking forward to. We know that the women's tournament has a huge significance. The men's tournament maybe isn't taken as seriously, but certainly the women's tournament is. So something very much to look forward to. JJ, we're going to kill it there on the Olympics, but when we come back after a short break, we're going to have a chat about an award that has just been shortlisted for. And it contains five players from different parts of the world. So after this break, we will talk about that.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSOZone.
Okay, so welcome back. JJ, I said before the break that we were going to be talking about an award that has been shortlisted for, and it is the BBC Women's World Footballer of the Year. It's the second accolade to be announced by the BBC. It's five players on that list. We know that Asisat Oshoala won the inaugural award last year. This year's award is, the shortlist is made up of Seattle Reign's Kim Little, Carly Lloyd of the United States, Becky Sauerbrunn of the United States, Gail Anikmui of Cameroon and FC Rosengard, and Amandine Henry of Lyon and France. Now, that shortlist has been made up from a selection of journalists who have all voted for themselves. And now it is open to the public. The voting is now open. You can go to the BBC Sport website and all the details are on there. Closing on the 9th of May. JJ, what do you make of that list that's been made up by the journalists?
Oh, it's interesting. First off, a BBC award, yet no player plays in the FAWSL, and only one represents Great Britain. I think that was the first one that jumped out to me when you said that Oshuala won it last year. That's a player obviously not born in England or in Great Britain, but plays or trade in the FAWSL. That, for me, made a little bit of sense. However, the voting group has decided to go elsewhere. I think it's a strong group. The one unknown is Gael. I'm not even going to try and have a go at pronouncing her last name because in fear of just completely messing it up. But otherwise, that's a very tough group to choose from. And, you know, hopefully it's a hotly contested vote.
Yeah, I think last year, Oshuala was the only representative from Africa. I think Iamiyama was on the list last year as well. I must confess, I haven't looked at last year's list. I've just focused on this one. Now, Gael Nganamui, I'm going to have a go, and if I am wrong, then I apologise to listeners. She had a very, very good season in Sweden last year. She was playing for Eskilstuna United, helped the team into the Champions League against all the odds, you know, beating off teams like Gothenburg and Örebro, who are in this season's Champions League, which earned her a move to FC Rosengard. And people may remember as well, although it was a game that probably went under most people's radars, she scored a hat-trick for Cameroon as well in the World Cup last year against Ecuador. She is an exciting prospect, no doubt about that. And if I was making up that list, she probably would have just missed out for me. I don't disagree with the other four players. I think Carly Lloyd is an obvious one, won the World Player of the Year, was player of the tournament at the World Cup last year. Becky Sauerbrunn is a player who has been constantly overlooked for accolades such as this. So I think in particular, it's nice to see her on there, isn't it?
Oh yeah, and I think it's fair statement that she's, if not the one of the best defenders in the world right now, and it's appreciated by the journalist group that put this together that they are recognizing her. And I know, you know, people will cry out, oh, you have two Americans on the list. Well, guess what? That they won the World Cup, and those were the two most influential players for that team in that tournament, so they are deserving.
It's a matter of opinions as well, isn't it? I think, yes, there are two Americans on there, but as you say, it's two World Cup winners. You've also got Kim Little, who, yes, plied her trade for Seattle Reign, so could be said that people have seen more of her because of the accessibility the NWSL has. But let's not forget that she also won the title with Melbourne City down in Australia in her first season for the club, the first season of the club's existence as well. They went undefeated, so I'm sure she must have had a big impact because she was also named the W League's Players Player of the Year this week. So she's had a big impact. And then you look at someone like Amandine Henri. We know her capabilities. We know about her qualities. We saw what she was capable of at the World Cup last year. She continues to win trophy after trophy for Lyon. And of course, people will get to see more of her in the United States when she joins the Portland Thorns. So I guess the question I'd have is, if you are going to remove one of those players, like a Gael Nganamui, who do you put in?
It's tough to being put on the spot right there, but you know, you'd have to go with like a Bachmann, perhaps. I know that's a player you and I have tossed out, especially towards the end of last year. That was one of our, you know, favorites out of the World Cup, and I think she has only seen her stock rise. So I'm going to go with her as that selection.
Okay, I would probably go, and I'm not going to talk about her too much because we're going to speak about it in a minute, but I would go with Ada Hegerberg based on the goal scoring that she's had for Lyon in her first season last year, winning trophies. Wasn't prolific in the World Cup, but I think she made enough of an impression. But after that World Cup, she continued her form for Lyon as well, and she at the moment is top scorer in the Champions League, and we're going to talk about that in a second. But I'm not disappointed with the list. I think, you know, it's a matter of opinion. I don't know who the journalists were, or the majority of the journalists were, who make up that panel, who vote for the award. So I don't know how they're thinking, and I don't know how the process works, but certainly an interesting list of five players. And I think if you asked any journalist in the world, they would probably all come up with five different names. But I imagine that the majority of them would have Carly Lloyd, Becky Sauerbrunn, Kim Little-Amandine Henri. I reckon it's probably that fifth position that probably most people would debate. But who knows? Who knows? But we'll move on, mate. And I mentioned Ada Hegerberg. And I want to have a chat with you about the UEFA Women's Champions League semi-final first leg, which took place this past weekend. Now, I'm going to have a word with Jasmina Schweimler, our German expert, in a minute. She's going to talk to us about Wolfsburg and Frankfurt. But I know you have managed to see the goals and some of the highlights from Lyon against PSG. Now, the first leg at home for Lyon finished 7-0. Two goals for Ada Hegerberg, two goals for Eugenie Le Sommer, and then a goal apiece for Lotte Schelling, Camille Abelie and Louise Nassib. Now, we've discussed it in the past about one-sided UEFA Women's Champions League matches. Never did I imagine that a semi-final between France's two top teams would finish so one-sided.
Well, I think at this point now, Kieran, with and when we have discussed it, not only between, you know, what the French league has currently come to, where it is a one versus two, but with the amount of times that those two teams now have played against each other over the past couple of years, there's a lot more tape in terms of watching big matches and how can teams scout against opponents. And let's be fair, PSG have lost a lot of that team from years past, and they've gone on elsewhere because they felt that one reason or another, the ceiling has been reached. They cannot go any further because Lyon continues to spend and spend and spend and bring in more big players. You know, seems like almost once a month that someone else is just, you know, signing up or saying that, oh, I'm going to be joining Lyon for next season. I wasn't overly surprised. Maybe seven was a little bit too much, but I wouldn't have been surprised if it was a similar result that we saw in the other first leg of the semifinals. But then again, if you want to watch a world-class one-sided thrashing, this probably was the match to go watch a world-class one-sided thrashing, because some of those goals were just stunning.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I actually managed to have a little message conversation with Ada Hegerberg, and she described the day as magical when I spoke to her. The first four goals, I think it would be fair to say the defending leaves a lot to be desired. I think Eugenie Le Sommer and Ada Hegerberg absolutely tore them apart, but the defending was questionable to say the least. But I look at the three goals after that, those two scored the opening four goals, but then you had a wonderful free kick from Camille Abelie on the edge of the box in off the post. You had a 25-yard screamer from Louise Nassib into the top corner. And then the seventh, and probably the best of the lot, was Lotte Schelling's, where a cross has come in. She's kind of flicked the ball with the back of her heel around the defender and then slotted it home. I mean, I watched it, I think I said to you before we came on the recording, I watched it about probably six or seven times to actually see what she'd done, how she'd executed it, and how it had actually got around the defender. And even now, I'm still a little bit baffled as to how she's actually pulled it off, because it was both sublime and ridiculous, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, and it was funny, actually, right before we went on to record, I was watching a replay of a recent Men in Blazers show, which can be watched on American television, where they broke down the 10 best goals of the Premier League season thus far. And the number one was Payet's free kick for West Ham. And almost in a similar situation, maybe the angle was a little bit more of an extreme. However, it just the physics that it takes to score from 18 yards out to get a ball up and over a wall, which, you know, would consist probably about 6 feet, and then to somehow get it over with power to get underneath a 10-foot crossbar.
We're talking about Abelie's free kick here, aren't we? So I was talking about Schelling's goal, but I completely agree with you on Abelie. I think Abelie's free kick, it's difficult to get a ball up and down over a wall so close in, isn't it?
Yeah, sorry. It's just the physics sometimes in free kicks. You just you don't understand it. You just sit back and watch and enjoy. I think that's really all you have to do.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. One question I have, now I know you don't get to see a lot of French football. I get to see more, but I don't get to see as much as someone living in France, for example. Eugénie Le Sommer and Ada Hegerberg, are they the most in sync and telepathic strike force in the world at the moment? Because I look at the way that they link up and the goals that they score, and a lot of it is one setting up the other. And I just it just seems as though they are the strike force that kind of exceeds all others at the moment. And you can throw in Lotte Schelling into that as well. But the relationship specifically between Le Sommer and Hegerberg is pretty special.
Well, you look at the results. You know, the goal-scoring rate that those three players have. And, you know, it's almost comparable to what we see in the men's game with Barcelona with those three. It's similar, where if you have a trio working, or if it's a duo, what have you, if they're working on the same wavelength, who have been playing together now for a couple of seasons, they train day in, day out, they know where each other is going to be making the runs all the time, it only starts producing results. And I think that this year we are starting to not hit the peak, we're starting to make that climb up the peak of what those three can do. And I think that this is going to be the trend for, you know, potentially a few more years to come.
Yeah, potentially, without a doubt, especially with Le Sommer and Hegerberg. Schelling, a little bit older than them too, and there have been a few whispers that maybe at the end of her contract she will look to return to Sweden, but certainly the three of them at the moment, absolutely on fire. And I think it's fair to say that Lyon have booked their place in Italy, haven't they? I mean, PSG overturning a 7-goal deficit, I think, I don't even see how that's even possible. You could probably reduce Lyon down to 9 players, and I still don't think PSG would be able to score 7 past them. So I think it's fair to say that they will be in the final. Now, I had a chance to speak to our German expert, Jasmina Schweimler, earlier today about the second Champions League semi-final and a little bit about the Frauen Bundesliga. The second tie, of course, took place between Frankfurt and Wolfsburg. So here she is, having a chat with me about that semi-final. Okay, so we've discussed Lyon against PSG with JJ, and now we move on to Wolfsburg against Frankfurt with our German expert, Jasmina Schweimler. Jasmina, now I know you are a Wolfsburg supporter as well as a follower of German football. So a 4-0 win, did that come as a surprise, how one-sided it was in that first leg?
It was definitely a surprise how one-sided it was, because I didn't expect it to be so one-sided. But then again, ever since Frankfurt beat Bayern Munich, it has gone downhill for them. They lost against Freiburg, and now they lost against Wolfsburg. So, yeah, definitely a surprise, but I'm more surprised how Frankfurt have played so far as title defender.
When you say surprised by how they've played, in what way do you mean surprised? You mean they've played badly or their style of play?
They played badly, yeah. No passion, no team play. It was a mess. So many individual mistakes. You don't play like that if you defend the title.
Is there, in your mind, any way back for them after a 4-0 loss? Can they overturn that deficit when they play in Frankfurt this weekend?
I don't think they can, and they don't even think they can do it. Like, on Facebook or the homepage, they write that they just want to win one last time before moving out of the Champions League. So it's gonna be tough. I'm not going to say it's impossible, because anything can happen, but the way Wolfsburg play lately, it's not going to happen.
When you started coming on to Women's Soccer Zone, you spoke about Isabel Kaszowski. She scored the first goal in that 4-0 win. She's benefiting from a few injuries in the team, isn't she? She's getting a bit of a run, but she's actually performing when she's given the chance.
Yeah, ever since she played with the national team at the She Believes Cup, I think Kellermann saw that she can play every match and start regularly, because she didn't before she played with the national team. And I was like, I wrote a blog about her on my homepage, kickitlikejazz.com, and I was hoping that Kellermann might see her full potential And it doesn't come as a surprise for me that she's doing so well. She can be very important for the team, and she has proven that now again.
Moving on to the Frauen-Bundesliga, big win for Frankfurt against Bayern Munich, inflicting their first defeat in probably a couple of years, because they were undefeated the whole of last season. They hadn't lost a game this season. So not all bad news for Frankfurt at the moment.
Yeah, but then again, like I said already, ever since they beat Bayern, it has gone downhill for them. But if you beat Bayern Munich, you have to go and keep that up. They played really passionate and great against Bayern, so I don't understand why they can't continue to play like that.
So they've gone downhill, obviously, but looking at the other end of the league, we've lost Köln, who will be relegated down to the second division, and it looks like it will be Werder Bremen joining them. They are 8 points behind Bayer Leverkusen with 3 games remaining. Is there any surprise with those two teams getting relegated?
Unfortunately, I have to say that it's not a surprise to me, especially Werder Bremen. They weren't even supposed to be in the first league because it was FC Lübers from Berlin who won the second division, but they couldn't afford being in the first league, so that's how they got into the first division. It's not really a surprise for me.
The team that won the league from Berlin, how are they doing this season? Are they going to be in the same situation? Are they winning the second division again and they're not going to be able to come up?
As far as I know, they are first again, but I haven't heard anything about if they're going to be in the first league. It's a really sad story. Maybe we can talk about that someday soon.
Okay, no problem. Well, Jasmina, thank you very much for joining me. I'm sure that you will be watching the second leg of the Women's Champions League game between Wolfsburg and Frankfurt, and we will get you back on in a couple of weeks' time, and no doubt we will have second time champions, we'll have back-to-back champions Bayern Munich, who are just 1 point away from the title. So thanks for joining me.
I can't wait to be back.
Women's Soccer Zone would like to thank our partners, She Kicks Magazine. Subscribe at shekicks.net for even more women's football.
So big thanks there to Jasmina. JJ, we move on. We're going to cover your bread and butter, the NWSL, shortly. But first off, the FAWSL. Now, I'm not going to go too much into the league because it's still very much early days. But in the last weekend, or this past weekend, we had the PFA Awards announced. Now, last year, the PFA Women's Player of the Year was won by Ji So-yun. Now, this is an award that is won and is based on votes from fellow players in the league, so it's voted for by their peers. Last year's winner, as I said, was Ji So-yun. The Young Player of the Year was Arsenal's Leah Williamson. This year, the Young Player of the Year went to Sunderland Ladies' Beth Mead, and the Players' Player of the Year went to Manchester City's Isabel Christensen. Now, we'll talk about those two in a second, but also the Team of the Year was announced, and I'll go through that very quickly. In goal was Hedvig Lindahl. Defence was made up of Lucy Bronze, Casey Stoney, Nee Fahey and Alex Greenwood. Midfield was Ji So-yun, Vicky Lasada, Jill Scott, Isabel Christensen, and then forwards Beth Mead and Dan Carter. Now, I know you don't get to see as much WSL as I do, JJ, for obvious reasons, but I guess my question to you is, from an outsider's perspective, when you see a name like Isabel Christensen winning an award like that, and it's not maybe someone who's more recognised like an Enya Luko or a Ji So-yun, what's your initial reaction?
Well, that means clearly that the players see something in her that, you know, maybe sometimes fans, sometimes media may overlook. And, you know, first off, I wish this player award is something that's a little more common here in the United States. I know that some professional leagues in general are starting to have these type of awards, but I think it speaks volumes that, you know, players go out and they, you know, they willingly say, okay, well, you know, my teammate A could be good, but hey, on team B, this player has just been superb and she should be awarded for, you know, her success this year. So I think, you know, the players, they've spoken and they think that Izzy Christensen, who's, you know, still young, still growing, But clearly what she has done, you know, her body of work throughout the season with Manchester City as well as England is worthy. And I think that's a good choice.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think I said when she was nominated and certainly when she made her England debut, for me, she was the most improved player of 2015. Came through the ranks, ironically, through the Manchester United Centre of Excellence. Now, this is a debate that goes on and on, but Manchester United have a Centre of Excellence for women. And then as soon as they graduate out of that Centre of Excellence, they don't actually have a Manchester United women's club to go into because there isn't one. So those players that graduate have to go to local teams like Manchester City or Liverpool or Everton. Izzy actually ended up at Everton, then went on to Birmingham City Ladies before moving to Manchester City. Now it's at Manchester City where she has really flourished. I mean, she, as I said, for me, the most improved player in 2015. Scores goals from midfield. I saw an interview with her when she first joined Manchester City, and she said that her biggest influence was Frank Lampard because of the goals that he scores from midfield. She is looking like that type of player. She has missed, unfortunately, the beginning of the WSL season. She got injured in an FA Cup tie just before the league season started, so she hasn't managed to make an appearance yet, but massively influential for that team. And as you say, still very young, 23, 24 years old, and will get better, no doubt about that. And I think when you look at who she was up against Hedvig Lindahl, Ji So-yeon and Gemma Davison, who won the double last year with Chelsea. And she was up against Beth Mead, the league's top scorer. So that says a lot, as you said, about what her fellow peers think of her and what they see in her. And I guess the same goes for Beth Mead as well, with a promoted club like Sunderland, top goal scorer in the division. I guess that one's a little bit more obvious because she was the one that scored the goals that kept them in the division.
No, yeah, I agree. And I think, not that I had a vote or anything, but in terms of looking into last season and the teams that you felt could have been relegated at the end of the year, you almost certainly penciled in that Sunderland was going to be there purely because they were the new team competing against, you know, the likes of the tops in that division, who have now gone to nearly a full-time, you know, training program. Some teams still are that, you know, part, not to say part-time, but, you know, they don't have the time or the finances or the facility or the time of the facilities to be playing soccer 24/7. But I think Sunderland, they made some noise last year and they've already taken a couple of points from their first two matches, so that's already a good start for them. We saw that Beth Mead got a couple of looks in an England camp, so hopefully that just means, you know, more opportunities, like Izzy Christensen herself, more opportunities for growth within the game and to get more opportunity, you know, more chances to show what they have, whether it's going to be Beth Mead staying at Sunderland or moving to a little bit of a bigger club, or she stays at Sunderland, gets more chances with the national team and continues to score goals either way, it's working.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Beth recently signed a new contract. I think she's pretty settled up there. There's very much a family mentality at Sunderland Football Clubs. Not many players that move on to other places. One reason being is that Sunderland's so far away from everywhere else. It's not really very easy for players to move away and go to bigger clubs. But like you say, started the season okay. Two draws from their opening two games. Man City women leading the way in the WSL. Three wins from three. Chelsea ladies, they also have a 100% record, two wins from two. They had a game that was postponed against Liverpool ladies earlier in the season because of a waterlogged pitch. But Arsenal ladies are the team that I've seen a couple of times this season so far, and they've already lost to both Manchester City and Chelsea, so they've got some ground to make up. But we'll talk more about the WSL in a future show because it is early days. We've spoken about the PFA Awards, and when we come back after this break, JJ, I actually managed to catch up with the PFA Players Player of the Year, Izzy Christensen. So here's Izzy. After I've finished the interview with her, you and I will talk about the NWSL. But first, was very pleased to catch up with the new 2016 PFA Players Player of the Year, Izzy Christensen. So here she is. Right, Izzy, thank you for joining me. Well, first off, nowhere better to start than Sunday night. You named the PFA Women's Player of the Year. A couple of days afterwards, has it sunk in yet? How are you feeling?
No, not quite sunk in yet, but obviously it's a fantastic achievement. I'm very, very proud of receiving the award, and obviously a recognition for the hard work that goes in on a domestic level. And yeah, I think it's going to take me a few weeks to let it actually sink in properly. And sort of every time I wake up, I see the trophy on the dining room table, and obviously I'm very proud. So.
How was the evening itself? I spoke to Leah Williamson when she won the Young Player of the Year award last year, and she said that it felt like, you know, it was the first time players had kind of gone to an awards do where they were kind of treated as equals. Did it feel like that again this year? Was it a nice evening for the players?
Yeah, it was a really, really nice evening. I think Leah's spot on really with the way the evening sort of panned out. I think it was obviously a very good marker for where the women's game's at in terms of the company we were in, and it wasn't so much a surprise for us to see sort of the top Premier League players anymore, because we're obviously now classed as high profile footballers, and then to be in a room full of such prestigious people and key people in football, it was obviously a very, very enjoyable evening.
How are you dealing with that? How are you dealing with that added attention? I've come through the ranks at Manchester United, then Everton, Birmingham City, but it's since probably the move to Man City where your profile has raised quite significantly. You're more recognised. You've obviously had international call-ups now. How are you yourself dealing with the added recognition and that, I guess, expectation that comes with being a high-profile player?
I fully embrace it, to be honest. I think that it's... where the game is at, I think we as players have a responsibility to be even more professional as we were sort of 6, 8, 12 months ago. And I think that as the game progresses, we need to ensure that the professional sort of profile of every player comes across well into the public eye. And I think that that's something I embrace, and it's something that I hope that younger players growing up will inspire to be like us as role models and move the game forward even more and make it more sustainable at this high level.
How special was the award on Sunday when you look at the players that you were up against? You had the league's top scorer in Beth Mead and three league title winners, or three double winners in Jisoo Yoon, Hedvig Lindau and Gemma Davison, and you coming out on top is testament to the season that you had last year.
Yeah, I mean, I was truly shocked to receive the award, and in amongst sort of such obviously other talented nominees. G, obviously a fantastic player, a similar sort of player to me, I'd like to think. And I did think that perhaps she might come out on top. And obviously Gem Davison, a hugely talented player. So I think I feel very, very humbled to come out as winner and amongst that pool of players. And obviously I think it's just a testament to the amount of work that I and the team have put in over the past 18 months to our squad and to be where we are today. And hopefully we've set a benchmark for women's football.
And the first player to win it from Manchester City women, that must be pretty special. I know your teammate Lucy Bronze won it, but she was, of course, at Liverpool Ladies when she got the accolade.
Yeah, we've had a bit of a joke. We've got to be a City player that wins it now for the next 5 years. But no, it's just a bit of a joke. But on a serious note, it's obviously a huge achievement, and I'm very proud to be representing this club, and obviously to receive that award on behalf of the club means a lot to me, so...
We haven't had the chance to turn out too much this season. Is he obviously injured in the FA Cup in March? I think it was 8 weeks that you were due to be out. How's the recovery going from the ankle injury you suffered?
Yeah, it's going really well, actually. It was quite a bad ligament tear in my ankle, so taking a little bit of time to heal. But now I'm on the last stretch, if you like, where I'm rehabbing and I'm working really hard in the gym and now... starting to run as well, so hopefully it won't be too long before I'm out there.
And what's the feeling in the team at the moment? You obviously had that heartbreaking last minute loss to Chelsea in the FA Cup, but league form going well so far. I guess the team can't be more pleased at the moment, can they?
Yeah, I think obviously we were devastated to exit the FA Cup 2 weekends ago, but I think that things like that obviously only add fuel to the fire, and I think that it was really important for us to get a result on Sunday against Birmingham to bounce back from that loss against Chelsea, and that's exactly what we did. And some would probably argue we didn't hit our best form on Sunday, but we got the result, and I think that shows how far the team's come. Maybe a couple of years ago we might have lost that game on Sunday, so obviously very, very pleased that the players are putting in good performances and getting results in circumstances. So, yeah.
For you on a personal level, I spoke a little bit earlier about the form that you had last year. I think it was 6 goals in 7 games towards the back end of last season, and as I said, an international call. Like, what's been the secret to the rise of Izzy Christensen? Because, as I said, a player that maybe went a little bit under the radar when at Everton and Birmingham City, obviously still very young, but as I said, still it's since that move to City that your form's really come on. What's been the secret to the kind of rise of Izzy Christensen?
Well, I think that first and foremost, I've always believed that I'm a good footballer, and I think that it's taken a little bit of time for me to get into a position and a situation here at Man City where I'm obviously a fully professional player now. I think that's really helped me, first and foremost. I think, obviously, learning sort of key things that perhaps I've failed at over the past few years and improved upon them and just really, really put the work in. I think that's the secret. I don't think there's any secret code or anything. I just think that I've put a lot of work in. I've always believed in my ability, and obviously I'm in a very, very good environment here at Manchester City where I get to obviously train every day with such good players, and the staff are excellent, and the situation here is excellent for a professional footballer. So I think that's definitely helped me a lot, and obviously I'm very thankful for the club for giving me the opportunity to play in the team and get to a point where I've helped the team out a lot. So yeah.
Something the players mention a lot, I mean, it's a difficult one, I guess, from an outsider to kind of understand, but just how significant is that full-time professional environment? What is the key benefit to being in every day as opposed to the 3 evenings a week that you probably had prior to turning professional?
I think it's huge, to be honest. I think the professional environment is massive to raise women's game, and I think that it's also easy to say, oh, we're professional now, therefore we must be good, but I just think it's also about getting the right people, the right functioning of the environment, and I think we certainly have that here. I know we have, and it works for different people, and obviously everybody at our club ticks, and we work really well together as a team and as a group of staff, and I think that in amongst the professional status is the key to sort of improving and getting better and better. So obviously I'm very, very thankful to be in this environment. You've got such high profile players around me, like Steph, Tony, Jill, Lucy Bronze, Cam Bardsley, obviously training with them every day, and obviously the rest of the girls, we really challenge each other, and I think that sort of environment is key to progressing.
And final question, you're happy to be part of the Man City setup. Of course, at the end of last year, you made your England debut, scored on your England debut against Estonia. What ambitions have you got in terms of fighting your way back into that squad when fully fit? And obviously the Euros is just around the corner as well, should England qualify.
Yeah, I mean, my ambitions at international level lie with winning things, and then obviously the first step towards that is getting back into the squad after the injury, and I'm very confident that I can do that, and I'll work very hard to be there and get in that highlight the fans moving forward, because the Euros is just around the corner, and I think it's really important for the team to keep evolving and to get into a position where England, whichever England team is there in the summer next year, is there to win. And I think that, I mean, I've said it in many interviews, but I feel very confident that the team that goes there to represent England will win the European Championships, and just hoping that we can continue to evolve and get better and better and start picking up some results.
Women's Soccer Zone would like to thank our partners, She Kicks Magazine. Subscribe at shekicks.net for even more women's football.
So big thanks there to Izzy. JJ, we move on to the NWSL. Now we're 2 weeks in. What are the main talking points? What are the top lines? What have we learned from the opening couple of fixtures?
Well, I mean, similar to the FAWSL, still very early going. So small sample size. Spirit, the Washington Spirit, that is, have been very, very strong this season. You know, 2 wins from 2 matches. First match didn't look overly impressive, but the second match against Sky Blue this past weekend, they definitely figured it out and put together a solid 90 minutes. Injuries were a big factor this weekend. Carly Lloyd down with an MCL sprain. Thankfully, it's not the other CL that was injured, so only just a couple of weeks there. Kat Williamson, Jess Fishlock, injured unknown status at this point. Also, Megan Klingenberg was seen getting a lot of attention after the end of Portland Thorns match. So week two is riddled by injuries, but outside of the Spirit at the top and Boston having a rough go of it for their first two matches, it's just a big log jam in the middle.
Yeah, and I've managed to see quite a few games, as I'm sure you have, and my initial thoughts, well, my initial kind of reaction was great opening day win for the Houston Dash over the Chicago Red Stars. I think when you look at how well Chicago did last year, for Houston to come out as quickly as they did, because I don't know about you, I think Dan and I discussed it during our NWSL previews, and I'm sure you have your own views, but Houston are one of those teams that I have them as a playoff team, but you wouldn't be surprised if they finish 7th or 8th, because they are one of those teams where they've got so many new players and there's been such a turnaround in personnel, they could go one way or the other, couldn't they? So for them to come out and win that opening game 3-1, yes, they lost to Orlando in the next game, but Orlando, first home game for the franchise in front of a record NWSL crowd, you knew they were going to be up for it. I thought Houston on the first week and Rachel Daly answering very quickly her potential with winning player of the week, that was a standout for me.
Yeah, I think first off, going back to what you said about either one or the other, I think it's actually interesting that you guys say that they could either finish in the playoffs or far from it. I don't think that they're going to be a team that's going to be slogging towards the back of the standings. I think they're either going to hover in that 3rd through 5th position. I think that they're, yeah, they do have a lot of new players, a lot of turnover from years past, but I think as opposed to years prior, they're deeper. They're going to have players that are going to be around for the long portion of the season, and the ones that aren't, they're very capable of filling in. But going back to what you said, they've started off well. It's a different team in terms of their tactics, a little more aggressive on the attack. They love to hold the ball at times as well. And Daly has been class to start. I think the goal that Andresa scored this past weekend was an absolute stunner of a shot from well outside of 30 yards. I think there's a lot of good pieces, and Randy Waldrum finally has his team that he's wanted.
Yeah, I have them finishing 4th. I am kind of indifferent in that they, as I say, they could finish one way or the other. I'm interested to see how they do when the national team players go away for the Olympics, but I do have them finishing in the playoffs. All I'm saying is that you wouldn't be surprised if they kind of finish sort of 6th or 7th, but I'm with you. I think they are a playoff team. I guess one thing that we've got to highlight is Seattle Reign's home record against Memorial, undefeated record coming to an end. Tasha Kai scoring on her return to the team, and Sky Blue getting arguably one of the biggest and surprising victories in the history of the NWSL. And I know that sounds quite dramatic, but when you go to the two-time Shield winners who haven't lost at Memorial Stadium, their home ground, to go there on the opening day and to win, that was a big shock.
It was, and I think, though, at the same time, even though, yes, Sky Blue did lose last week, this is a very different New Jersey-based club than in 3 years prior. This is a team that looked to attack. They didn't look to sit on their laurels. Yes, Seattle, they were not at their best. I'm going to get to that in a quick moment. But, Sky Blue, they had a game plan. They executed it. And then this past weekend against Washington, sure, they went down a goal early. They went down 2 halfway through the second half, but they kept pushing. They kept pushing. They got one. They created several chances to get a second. And I think, there are going to be some losses in there, probably more losses than victories, but I think Sky Blue is going to surprise a few teams. Now, Seattle, on the other hand, and Karen, I think, you and I both know Laura Harvey, and that she's very adamant in how competitive this league is. And she said it blatantly, straightforward, back in January at the NSCA convention in Baltimore. If you don't show up in a match with the NWSL, you lose, plain and simple. And guess what? Seattle didn't show up all the way, and they lost. But then they responded. They got angry. Whatever Laura had to say to them in between match 1 and 2 clicked, and that was a pretty one-sided beating that they put on Boston this past weekend.
Yeah, I watched that one. It wasn't pretty. I know Boston had their chances but didn't take them, and if you don't take your chances, as you say, you're going to get beaten. I mentioned earlier the record attendance and the opening game for the Orlando Pride. Good 3-1 win over the Houston Dash. Goal for Alex Morgan. They'll be pleased to be off and running.
Yeah, they will, and I think, you know, that's a team that I think may fit a little better into that statement of could make the playoffs, but then could finish in seventh, because they're a team, when they're at full strength, they're dangerous, but when they're not at full strength, you don't really know what's going to happen, what even team will Tom Cermonti put out there, because there are a lot of internationals and a lot of players that are going to miss significant time due to the Olympics. But right now, get as many points as you can and continue to build off the success of what they did, because it was a slow first half. I think both teams canceled each other out. But after the own goal that was scored a couple of minutes into the second half, then Orlando just took right off and they didn't look back.
Well, they lost their opening game at Providence Park to the Portland Thorns. Goals for Dagny Brynjarsdóttir and Lindsay Horan. Portland then went on to draw their second game away at FC Kansas City. Good start for them. Good start for Mark Parsons. Not pulling up any trees, as we would say over here, but some solid results there.
Solid results, yes. You know, they played well in the first match. I think they did enough to get a result. Obviously, they were playing up a player for the entirety of their second half against FC KCB's Shea Groom, got sent off for a second yellow card 2 minutes in to the second period. Though, as I did mention, there are a couple of injuries that happened later on, one of them being to a key cog in the back line, and Cat Williamson, unsure at this point what the timetable is there or even what the injury is for that matter. And then I said also as well, Megan Klingenberg was getting looked at a lot in the last 10 minutes of that match. So you take the good with the bad, but the good is for Portland that they're 4 points of two matches, getting a couple of goals. They got Dagny off the mark early, which I think was good for them. They need her to score goals, because it can't be Horan doing everything. It can't be Tobin Heath setting up Horan to do everything. So they get a second outlet, which is good, and I think, you know, it could definitely be a strong year for them.
And one of the things we haven't spoken about, well, we mentioned the fact that they lost the opening game to the Houston Dash. Chicago Red Stars had a victory in their second game over another team that we haven't mentioned yet, Western New York Flash. What have you made of those two early days?
The Flash, young, you know, they're going to put some results up. Obviously, they went to Kansas City and won their first match, 1-0. Expect Sabrina D'Angelo and goal to have a heavy workload in the early part of the season as they figure out their defensive identity. Chicago, shaky in their first match, a little better in their second match. Not good, but better. Their defense, and it's irony because they've got a lot of stars on that team, but they were not unimpressive, but I wasn't impressed, I think, to put it that way.
And I think the only team that we haven't mentioned, Boston Breakers, 2 games, 2 defeats, the only team without a point on the board. A difficult game for them. Well, 2 very difficult games, really, to open with, away at Washington Spirit, who've won their opening games, and home to Seattle, who, when they click, no team can really compete with them. It's a tough job for Matt Beard, isn't it? Because they need to get a point or a win on the board ASAP, because the longer it goes on without a win, the more it hits the squad's confidence, and the longer it, or the harder it is to keep up with the teams above you.
Well, I think it is, but you also have to look at the schedule that they've got together for the first few weeks of the season. They play every playoff team that has ever been in the NWSL playoffs in the first 6 matches, including, you know, as we've said, Spirit away, Seattle home, Portland. You know, there's a good possibility they could be a playoff team home. Chicago, last year playoff team home. Sky Blue away, and then FC KC home. I'm not seeing a whole lot of points, Kieran, coming out of those first 6 matches. And that's, I know Matt Beard has gone on record and saying, you know, that's going to be a benchmark you know, how they perform in those six matches and where can they build from those first five matches. Yeah, that's a quarter of the season, but I think he's right. It's a completely new squad trying to understand his mentality and what he wants to see out of them on the field. I think that the team backs him. I don't think that this is a situation from a couple of years ago where we had an unknown in women's soccer and Tom Durkin. Matt Beard obviously has the pedigree. So it is going to be one of those give it time moments. Obviously, it's the last thing that Boston Breaker fans want to hear because it's never really gone for them well in franchise history in terms of getting to the postseason. But give it time. It might not be this year. It might not even be next year, but it is going to happen. It's just a matter of when.
I completely agree, and you've got to look at the season that Laura Harvey had with Seattle Reign the first year. They were a team that languished near the bottom of the league. I think they finished second bottom in the end above Washington. And then the following season, both Washington and Seattle were playoff sides because Laura Harvey had certainly been given time. Washington did make changes, but I think you're right. I think Matt is realistic as well. I think when I spoke to him for our Boston Breakers preview, he knows that he's got to learn this league. He knows that he's got to try and adapt as quickly as possible. But he's also very aware and very... he's not putting any pressure on his players. And I don't necessarily think the owners are putting pressure on him. I think he'll be given time. Because why would you bring in a player or a coach from abroad if you weren't going to give them time? You might as well just bring in someone domestically who is just going to do a similar job to Tom Durkin. You need that continuity. You need that time given to the manager. And if you do give him time, then you may, there's no guarantees, but you may see similar results to what he was able to achieve at Liverpool Ladies. It might just take him a little bit longer. But NWSL certainly not disappointed in the early weeks. But JJ, I think that actually brings us to the end of the show. So I want to thank you for helping me out once again after an absence. It was like you'd never been away, mate.
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure.
Good man. Well, if you wish to contact us, you can do. We are on Twitter on @WosoZone. Email us on WosoZone@gmail.com. You can listen to the show through two avenues. You can listen to us on iTunes or you can listen to us on audioboom.com/WosoZone. So until next time, take care of yourselves and bye-bye.